Going through a divorce is probably the hardest thing you're ever going to do. The financial aspects tend to freeze people. They're scary. If you've been one of those victims of narcissistic abuse that was unaware of or had access to the financials, then you're confused. How am I supposed to fill out those financial papers if I don't even know where the money is? And if you've been financially abused, you don't even like have any clue where to start to put together even a financial affidavit that's required by the court. My next guest is Hirsch Sturman, and he is a financial expert that helps people during divorce. And we're going to talk about some of the mistakes that people make, as well as what you should be doing to get through with the least amount of pain and knowing what your rights are. And you're going to love him. He's got so much information. So let's go welcome Hirsch, and we're going to see how to get through this divorce financially, not just paying for the lawyer, but what are your rights? Narcissists love to gaslight us. There's no money. You're not entitled to anything. You were the stay-at-home parent. Sorry, you don't get anything. Have a nice day. That's what gaslighting is. And we're going to learn the truth today about what your rights are and where to start, and what a financial person can do to help you win your case and get what you need to survive. So this is Tracy Malone. Thank you so much. We are going to go welcome Hirsch, and I'll see you on the other side. Welcome, Hirsch. I'm so happy to have you here.
Such a pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
I have been on your podcast and radio show, and you are the financial expert. Can you talk to our audience and just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely. And just to know, you have to come back because that show was amazing. So I do want to thank you for that. And yes, a little bit about my background. I've been a finance person my whole life. I've had my CPA going on about 25 years at this point. I started with Ernst & Young, kind of the traditional, you know, finance stuff. And about 15 years ago, I originally went out on my own, but a little over 10 years ago, I even changed direction again. I went through three major life cycles. All of them were these massive light bulbs about how we teach our children how to cook a meal, how to change a tire, whatever it might be, but we don't tend to teach them how to manage their daily finances. And when I went through my divorce, one of those three life cycles that happened literally in about 22 months, by the way, I started coaching people back then. That was actually 2013. And it was just such a light bulb to say, this is what people need when they go through divorce. You're so emotionally charged to begin with, let alone have to think logically and financially. You know, my education, I guess, a little bit is I have an MBA in finance and accounting, the CPA. I'm also a certified divorce financial analyst, the CDFA. And then, as you mentioned, I have a radio show and a podcast. So I guess that's me in about 90 seconds.
That's so. Really good. That's a really good thing. And again, you are the expert on financial, anything financial when it comes to divorce. And you know, when people are with a narcissist, the abuse with money has been going on for years. And many of them don't even know it, right? It's all of a sudden, it's like, we have retirement there, or, you know, where did the money go that I thought we had? Or I never knew this or this about our financial situation, because narcissists terribly don't like to share that information. And during the divorce, they steal money, they hide assets, they you know, run up debt. I've had clients where they're, you know, making $1 million a month husbands, and this happens to be the situation, guys, it's not you personally, you know, they made a lot of money and they opened up 10 credit cards in the wife's name and rang them all up and ruined your credit. So the financial part of not only the preparation, but the wounds that you are going to be thrown at, is overwhelming. There's nothing, I'm sure that normal divorces have their financial little things too, but these are usually quite large, and the betrayal of what happens and the lying and the, you know, all of that stuff. And then there's even two camps, the people that are divorcing that have a money and the ones that don't, because those dependent on the say narcissist in this situation, they don't know what they have. They're gaslit to say, you'll never get anything. And there's nothing there in the first place. And, you know, it wasn't yours. You were the stay-at-home mom or dad. You get nothing, right? So they're gaslit to believe they don't have any rights. So how does someone start this? What's the first thing they got to do?
The first thing is, and this sounds weird coming from a cold, heartless CPA, CDFA, but you need to breathe, take a step back, and absorb what's going on. That's the first thing you need to do. Where you are today is not where you were at the beginning of your marriage to start off with. As you said, there's a lot of control. There's a lot of things being hidden or kept secret, or you don't need to know, or that's what I take care of. And it's all out of the way from you. So the first thing is you've got a lot of catch up to do. So really stepping back, understanding what is going on, what might be going on, thinking through things you've seen become very, very important. It's almost like recreating a timeline without really knowing the timeline was there, right? So when you saw mail come in, was this something from Fidelity that he has never told you about? Whatever it might be, those are some of the things that you need to think about. So collect your emotions, gather yourself up, keep them in check, by the way, which is brutally difficult. And just remember, I think another thing just with that is your energy gets mirrored. The more aggressive you are, the more it exacerbates that narcissism or that emotion coming at you from the other end. So the first thing is stepping back, starting to get an understanding of your financial situation is very, very important. Who am I financially, or who are we? Because you're still married at this point. Who are we? So start to get organized. I work from a, you know, prioritize, organize, simplify manner. I'm talking about kind of really that middle step. So where are bank accounts? Where's he worked or she worked in the past? Because there might be retirement money there, or if there was, where did it go, right? These are all the things that you need to think about. Now, are you going to be able to sit down and write it all down at once? No. Keep a little notebook with yourself. Just add to it. Oh, I think I saw blah, 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 right? These are the kind of things that you need to think about. Gather all the accounts that you can think of. If any of it's in joint names, start collecting those statements. At some point, you're going to have to look at them, go back as far as you can, and just hold them. Because that's another thing that happens. All of a sudden, that file disappears from the file cabinet, or the access to that account gets changed. So all of these things, I think, are very, very important. At some point, you want to review them. Right up front may not be the right thing. You're very emotional. You start to see stuff, and you see a $15,000 purchase at Cartier or whatever it might be. You're not in the right frame of mind to handle that, right? At some point you will be, or you may need help doing that. Someone like yourself who's objective and can guide them on their journey. Someone like myself who can look at the data. But at some point you're gonna move from stepping back and kind of taking inventory to really needing an action plan. And that's where the prioritize, organize, simplify method that I use, and it's pretty flexible, but those are kind of the stages I walk you through, are very, very important, because you really do need to know what are your values, what do you want at the end of this. Organize around how do I get that and what do we have that's going to support me getting that, and then kind of systemizing that as you can.
As you were talking, like the thing that came to my mind, which I have a lot of clients do at that stage, is pull your credit report. Surprise, you have a second mortgage and right. No value in your house. They took it out last week. You know, these are the things that you can find in there. The other things that you're talking about is dig through those drawers, look through the things. I got a call from Citibank during my divorce, oddly on the house phone that he didn't live at anymore, that said, congratulations on your Citibank card. We will, you know, it was one of those things that I was like, let's ask for those statements, right? It's right. A cookie trail, if you would, to go, what don't I know? And when you do get a hold of, say, the banking statements, you know, are you looking for money that was transferred out? Well, where'd that $2,000 go? Or again, like, okay, Wells Fargo, what are we paying them for? Oh, there must be something we need statements for. Like, you need to be that detective in the beginning, for sure.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think people, when they see something on a statement, their initial reaction is, I'm going to confront that partner, that spouse. Don't do that. Gather it all together. The more you let them know that you know something, the more they're going to close everything out and shut everything down. Mm-hmm. So leave things the way they are, because they may slip up. They may get careless and leave something, as you said, kind of in a drawer that now you can find, right? As opposed to if you let them know that you know about that Citibank card, all of a sudden something's going to happen around that Citibank card. So really, the less you engage at this point especially, the better. And that's why I'm saying that building that inventory, as you said, pull that credit report, start looking at statements, gathering them. And you know, if you know there's a statement and you have access to that account, grab the last 3 years worth of statements, because at some point you won't be able to. Your name is probably on the tax return. Go to the CPA if you use a CPA and say, it's my tax return, not ours, not his or hers. It's my tax return. I want the last 3, 4, 5 years worth of copies. There's a tremendous amount of information, and I will caution you, when you ask for it, they're going to give you the first 2 pages of that 1040. No, you want all the schedules, the 1, 2, 3, A, B, C, D, E, F. Yes, there's a little bit of an alphabet soup in there. Each one gives you different information that, again, you hold close to the vest, and at the right time, when you need it, you bring it up.
I love that, close to the vest. I'm going to use that. Like, I give the same information. Do not tell them that you have anything, because right, as you said, boom, it'll be shut down. But it also shows them another thing, that you're looking, that you're not the deer in the headlights that they're seeing. And the, wait a second, I didn't think that person was going to be strong enough to do this.
Right.
Deeper, right? It moves things offshore. It becomes, again, especially at that last moment when divorce is already pending, then moving money to Switzerland is not going to look good for them. However, I had a Swiss bank account. My ex had a Swiss bank account, and it had millions of dollars in it. Wow. And I had the statements, and all he and then his parents got on the stand and said, yeah, we closed that out. Don't know where the 5 million is. Sorry. And the judge went, well, listen, Switzerland, I have no jurisdiction. Have a nice day. And right. I was, oh, wait, here's the statement.
That was 2 weeks ago.
Exactly. I'm like, what could you do? Yeah. Right. But when you're looking at all of these things, you have to become the detective, and you have to become a spy. Spies are quiet. Spies don't reveal all their secrets, because as soon as you do, the gig is up and you will not get access to anything.
And there's something else I do want to throw out. I know you and I have spoken about this before in the past. We throw the word narcissist around a lot. Not every single person getting divorced is a narcissist. And let's pray that's the case, because if you're getting divorced, that would make you one of them, right? Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean that you're not facing an enormous challenge. And it doesn't mean that they don't have strong narcissistic tendencies. Mm-hmm. I want to throw that out, because I think it's important. So what you're dealing with is real. That's what I want to really get to. The second part to it is people who have narcissistic tendencies or are narcissistic, they live in a bit of a world of illusion. And one of those illusions is they're in control of you. Mm-hmm. The more you reveal, the more you break that illusion. And that illusion can really work to your advantage as you go through the process. Mm-hmm. And so that's another reason you don't want to kind of reveal at all. Another thing you do want to do, by the way, is protect yourself. If there are passwords that need to be changed, you need to get educated on a lot of things. You know, take a little bit of cash out as a precaution. If you're not the one who has access, which often happens, they control the finances. They keep you on a leash that way. You go to the grocery store, hey, can I get $40 in cash? Can I this? Can I that? Start to stockpile a little bit. I'm not saying start to do anything illegal or immoral, but protect yourself in some of these different ways and have a strategy of flying under the radar. Don't go and take $5,000. It's a huge red flag. But $50 here, $40 there, put it together till you get to your $5,000, your $10,000, whatever it ultimately is that you need. Fly under the radar. It's a much better way to do it.
Much better. And again, we're dealing with people who are under the radar all the time. Everything they do is under the table. It's just, right? So keeping your cards to yourself in poker, nobody knows what you have. And then you have the power to bluff if you have to actually come up with the evidence when it's needed. If you you know, leverage is only leverage if they don't know it's coming. If you tell them, I've got this thing, hello, it's over. They'll bury it. It'll be gone. They'll deny it. They'll have all their excuses in their pocket to kind of get out of and weasel out of that.
I just got to give you one quick example. You said sometimes you can bluff. And I had a case where literally the only thing my client found out were the last four digits of an account number, because you know how they encrypted and only the last four, right? And when it came down to negotiating, I had guided them and said, throw out the last four digits. And they knew the bank institution. That's all they knew. They knew it was at Chase and here the last four digits. And I said, flip it and say, the only thing I don't know about this account are the first digits. I know everything else. You thought you were hiding it very well. And all of a sudden there was an enormous doubt in this individual's mind sitting across the table, because they knew a bank account, they knew the last four digits, and they thought they were hiding it. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden that account opened up and here's another $150,000. I'll keep, you know, so yes, sometimes having a little bit of information and bluffing with it gets you the rest of that information or gets you more than you thought you could get before.
I love that story. That's so helpful. Yeah. Because again, I'm always telling people, you know, we're not exactly bluffing. This is lawyer language. This is leverage. This is sort of teasing, like you're saying, right. Hey, we've got everything, but we're just missing this. But man, we got everything. And they're just like, oh no, because now they're, you know, they've got to come clean because you did, you know, expose that.
And for a narcissist, very often perception and how they are seen by everybody else, except their family, but everybody else is so important. And something should get out about how they're not this pristine hero that everybody thinks they are, is going to be a devastating blow to a narcissist. And that is something they often will protect as well.
Yeah. Do you know your narc stuff pretty well?
I unfortunately have had a couple clients where we've had to deal with this.
Yeah. Again, I think they're everywhere, and we do have to. You know, it's friends who are having divorces. It's prevalent, but again, as you said, not everyone is. But the people I talk to usually are, because they know and they're coming to me.
Right. And it's very real. The struggle that you go through, whether they are or aren't, it's a very real struggle. I do need to emphasize that.
And turning to your lawyer for the you know, what you can take is important. My lawyer told me, clean out the bank account. And I was like, really? He's like, but we're going to put it in escrow in my bank account. So like, we literally could send, here's the statements. And I was called a thief every day. But then, no, it's actually in escrow in the lawyer's office. She doesn't have it. But every time he didn't pay me the support he was ordered to pay, my lawyer would go, excuse me, judge, but is it okay if she takes out the money he's owed her 3 months in arrear right now out of his share of that? And they would say, absolutely. So we were whittling down his half because he was obviously not cooperating.
Right.
But things, again, that's the unusual part. In my book, I researched and I said, you know, half the money is usually what lawyers say, not all of it. I was lucky enough to have this particular kind of, you know, way to protect myself, but it didn't stop it. The cost of me taking that out was great. I was the thief. I was this. And you know, it's not so much that the court cared because they knew it was an escrow. But right. It gave them permission to tell every person I know that I was a thief, right? Because I did.
It's a very hard dynamic sometimes because you've lost your voice over the last X years of your marriage. Mm-hmm. And if there's ever a time you needed it and to have that thick skin, it's now. Because the names and the derogatory terms and the downputting is going to be significantly escalated beyond what you've ever experienced, especially when you try to protect yourself and stand up.
Absolutely. You are, again, sorry for your expertise, but you know, it's not like, oh, I think I'll grow up and be a narcissist expert, right?
Right.
It happened, but in the financial divorce world, those seem to be the more high conflict situation. So definitely. If someone is going through this, you've probably seen a lot of mistakes like I have and go, oh no, don't do that, right? What are the biggest financial mistakes people make going through a divorce?
So I got to tell you, one of them is getting the other person's back up or revealing too much. I'm going to nail you to the wall because you've been lying our whole marriage. Anything like that, you know, and you've got a top 10 list and it kind of aligns with that number one. Don't call them out. Don't call them that name. That's the last thing you want to do. So again, it comes to that flying under the radar. I will warn you, the most expensive part of many divorces, especially when you're dealing with a narcissist, are your emotions. People talk about lawyer fees and all the rest of the things. Emotions can become the most expensive part of any divorce. You need to keep them in check. But I think some of the other things are making those big moves without having the protection behind it. The example you gave was perfect. If you're going to make a lot of, transfer of a large sum of money, get it in escrow at an attorney's office where the court is not going to frown on that move and say, Judge, he shut down 3 out of 4 of the accounts. This was a protective move because he cut her off from all the finances. Something like that becomes very big. I think from a general, and this is a little bit of strategy as well, but so many people don't have a direction of where they want this to go. And again, part of that is you being barraged with names and downputting and, the kind of misleading things that come out and the rabbit holes people go through. So I think the first thing also, or one of the first things that needs to be done once the dust is settled of your emotions, that you now know this is happening. Next is, what are my values? What are my priorities? What do I want this to look like at the end? Because now you have a direction. Everything that you negotiate around, you can be thinking, does this bring me the joy that I've kind of envisioned at the end of all of this? Or is it something that gets in the way? Or is it something I can use to negotiate? You become much more focused if you know where you want to go. And it's really mostly a values-based priorities. What brought me joy or what brings me joy that I want in my life again? I think that's where, you can focus around. And people go blindly after every comment. And that's a big mistake. If you can have some focus, you can say, that's irrelevant. Or, oh, this we do need to deal with. Mm-hmm. So putting your energies in the right place. Another one, I think, is where you just, I'm going to show them and you start buying a new car and you start, don't make massive impulsive buys or big buys or move money. Don't do that, right? I think another one is that you need to be reasonable. A lot of people see this as I'm going to get you back. It's my time now. Put in whatever adjective you want. But I think that's a very big piece of it, is you can't just go and start living a life with, without purpose and without recourse. There is going to be recourse. So protect yourself on all of these things, I think, as you go through it. I think, though, I said this up front, educating yourself is just going to be an enormous piece of this as well. The chances are you have not been in control or understanding the full picture of the finances. And that is going to become a very big piece, that people start to go through this process or even get right to the end and they really don't know who they are financially. They're going on trust that this person, as you said, they believe a lot of things. That's not your money. I was the one that worked. They devalue themselves. Mm-hmm. These are all things that have a major financial impact as you go through a divorce.
Those are amazing. All good things. I was thinking of one as you were talking that I know I did on your radio show about one of my mistakes is chasing the wrong false allegations. Chasing things that don't need to be chased. And again, this could be in the financial realm, but, asking your lawyer, what do I need to do? How do I get there? And not going just to prove that's not true. As I said, because we moved that money and it went into escrow, I was called the thief over and over. And I never thought to ask, exactly what did I steal? Because that's an escrow. Yeah. That's not mine. I just bought it, like with a sword going, I didn't steal any money. And it cost me $100,000 to prove I didn't steal anything. But I didn't have to waste that time because that was all that was moved, and it was moved, not stolen. Unlike the Swiss bank $5 million. That was certainly moved and stolen, but I wasn't even, you know, able to do that. So they're always projecting onto you. But to know that you have more rights than you know is to understand all of this.
Don't believe everything you hear just because they say it doesn't make it true, I think is a very big one. You know, the other, I don't know if this is a mistake, but I think it's a very important concept or thought to keep in mind. Too often we talk about something with a narcissist conceptually. Oh, the bank account over at that bank. And they are the masters of manipulating and spinning content. It's got to be more, and I'll give you an example. It's more the, I don't know why I'm picking on Chase all of today. I don't even bank. It's the Chase checking account that, you know, on April 13th had $72,500. That's the account. It's very difficult when you have the exact numbers and the proof of a statement to, they're going to try to twist it, but it's very difficult to really deny it or twist that. As opposed to, and a bank account over there, oh, it doesn't have that much, or you're overstating the balance, or, you know, whatever it is. If you overstated $1, you've overstated it, they're going to twist it, right? Those are the kind of things. So as specific as you can be, again, I don't know that it's a mistake, but it's a positive effect as opposed to maybe a mistake that you.
Yeah, that's really helpful. Thank you. So when someone works with a financial expert through divorce, like you, how do you help them? What do they need to know? I brought you here so people can go, I need him, because all of my clients deal with so many different betrayals and the financial piece, and some are just deer in the headlights, so overwhelmed that, you know, getting out the financial affidavit is something that they couldn't do with their own skills. So how do you help?
So financial affidavits is a big one. And one of the things I do is not just help people compile them. My favorite story for financial affidavits is somebody, this is going back quite a few years already, literally dropped off 296 documents and said, will you compile my financial affidavit? I don't know what to do. And that was quite a chore, I will be honest. But I can help to that degree. My preference is to teach you and guide you, because you're going to learn along the way. And boy, do you need to learn quickly at this point, right? So financial affidavits, but taking it and then comparing it to the opposing financial affidavit becomes a big one. Mm-hmm. Any number somebody puts down on that financial affidavit can be contested. And so be realistic, but, you know, be aggressive a little bit. But at the same time, let's challenge what's on the other side. A lot of times they don't know what they have. So I can help them do forensic work, whether it's tearing apart, as I said, you know, tax returns. I'll give you a nice example there, because this happened actually about a month and a half ago. I was given 4 years worth of tax returns, and the dividend income went from about 11,500 down to about 2,000. It dropped over $9,000. And in my estimate, that's about $300,000 worth of assets that have possibly gone away. When we pulled those statements, guess what went away? About $300,000. So the tax returns, it's not just what's on there, but looking at those trends year over year, that sometimes gives you a lot of this information as well. So the forensic work is a big one. And again, I can, you know, tear apart a credit card, I can tear apart tax returns, all the rest like that. Being educated, I think I take a very educational approach. So I think that's very, very important. And creating a financial strategy. One of the things I do, I think it's so important to have that focus to and beyond the divorce. So identifying what are the values, what are the things you want in your life. And some of that obviously often is going to take a financial backing to give you that. So if you want your kid to go to a parochial school, hey, that's going to cost more money. And if your spouse says no, you may ultimately have to foot it. How are you going to do that? That's got a financial consequence, right? So understanding your values and really putting them down there. They change. The beginning one is, I just want to get a chunk of his flesh. Change that to how you're going to live your life, right? So they do change through that. The second one is create a budget around this. And I actually have termed it the divorce budget. I don't do the traditional budget of what comes in, what goes out. Hopefully there's something at the bottom line. I ignore your income up front, actually, or your needs up front. We look only at your essential spend. What are we absolutely going to spend to get through the month? What do I want in my life, or maybe what am I spending now, wherever you are, right? That's going to take your bottom line threshold to a top number. And now you've actually got the framework of a strategy. What do I really want at the end of this? Where's my starting point, that top line? What can I not go behind, but really I'm going to negotiate for something in the middle? Now we've got the framework. Now we start figuring out, what are we going to give up? What are we going to use? How do we do that? And going through the values, by the way, I say, what do you think his value is on this? What do you think his priority is? Because you can identify ways to negotiate against that. I've got a great story on debt. They had amassed about $38,000, and she said, oh, he's terrified of debt. They were earning good money. They could cover it. But when he was a kid, his parents had filed bankruptcy. They were in a soup kitchen 2-3 nights a week. So he was terrified of debt. So we used that. We said, we'll take the debt. You give us 2 years worth of interest on that debt, right? At 23%, you've got almost half, he's half already covered in this case. But then we want this for us to take the debt. So we actually got an additional bump because we negotiated for additional, to relieve him of carrying debt. And so all of this becomes, how do you create that strategy, which becomes very, very important. I think the other thing, you do this in a very vital way. I do it on the financial side, keeping expectations realistic, keeping them in check, being objective, bringing reality to some of these situations. All of those come with what I work with, as I work with, you know, the people as I go through them.
Yeah. Again, what you're doing is so important. And I think all my clients need someone to hold their hand through this, because even comparing what you said in the tax returns, yo, where'd the 300 grand go, right? And being really observant when you do look at those statements, again, year after year, if you had pulled 3 years of that particular account, you would have went, well, that's weird. And of course, we would have accepted the excuse all those years, going, it's the market, it'll go back up next year. But meanwhile, right, they just fizzled out the money, right? When you're looking at the financial affidavits and looking at their side, that was so fascinating to me, because my ex put down $6,000 a month for rent to his parents, whose house he now owned during our divorce. And I'm like, okay, he doesn't pay $6,000. I know that. But right, we were able to go, could we see the lease?
Right.
Could we see the canceled checks? Oh no, I paid with cash. Could we see the withdrawals then? Because they're not clearly on any of the bank statements you gave us. So if you're withdrawing $6,000, where's it coming from? And why don't we have the statements right for that account? So that one line was just like a little tree of like knowledge. I was like, oh no, 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 no. And eventually we got them to take that off and go, what's a comparable rent in the area if you didn't already own the house? And right, $2,000 in there, and it cut down, you know, his numbers. He also had $1,000 a month in magazines on his financials. So I went back through 5 years of my statements and said, not one magazine subscription, you know. But it's looking at those numbers and questioning them, right, and comparing them to the statements if you've got them. And eventually they will give them to you. And then if you don't have access to them, then you can kind of do this detective work. But finding the holes in those things where they've escalated monies and numbers are just like way more than they should be, or they've taken something down. And I think a lot of people in my world who filled this out, and I did it wrong too when I first started, you know, I don't really need any clothes, I don't need anything on that line, or I don't go on vacation, I can live without that. And we're starting to like give back before we know.
Giving away our life is what we're really doing.
Yeah, so exactly. So, I mean, there's so much about that you guide people through. So
I think the other piece to it, and you kind of alluded to this, I think, but if you've looked at 100 or more financial affidavits, you start to pick up on things, you know. So, for example, I had a client who received the spouse's financial affidavit. Everything was round numbers. Not one item was not a zero at, you know, like a 500 or, you know, 700. That's a question to me. Mm-hmm. You're telling me your mortgage is exactly that? No, it's not, right? Things like that. That's number one. The other one is, I think you start to pick up on what's reasonable. If they had put $100 a month, $70 a month for that line instead of $1,000, you might have brushed over that.
Exactly.
You know, So after looking at so many dozens of financial affidavits, you really do get tuned in to what this is. I had literally, I had a situation where the medical expenses went up almost $100,000. It just happened to go up a year and a half before the divorce, right? No one in the household was that sick. So these are a lot of things that, you know, I think are intuitive for you or me when we look at something like that. But it's because this is what we do every day. We're not expecting somebody going through a divorce, never been through it before, and, you know, does something completely separate, to be able to really identify or have that gut feeling going, that doesn't look right. There's something off here. And that sometimes in itself can bring up tremendous amounts of things that you weren't aware of or would never have thought to follow, you know, follow the trail.
Absolutely. And what you're saying, and what I want to make really clear before we end this interview, is what you're talking about. People make a very, very big mistake. They think lawyers do this stuff.
Yes.
They think, oh, my lawyer will pick up the fact that there's $6,000 on the line up for rent. Oh, my lawyer will know that there's something wrong, or that our tax returns had $300,000 difference in dividends. My lawyer will pick that up. And there's nothing further from the truth like that. Want to talk to that for a second?
Absolutely. I'm happy to say more and more attorneys are starting to hand that over to me. I'm getting more, for example, more and more true ups where you got to look at earnings, tax returns, things like that to say, you know, did they pay you the right amount last year in child support or maintenance, things like that. I actually just found an $11,000 error that the attorney completely missed, right? And the attorney said to me, I'm a legal person. And the truth is, you're not going to come to Hirsch for legal advice. I'm not an attorney. I've learned a lot, as you have, through our process and through the years that we've been doing this, but we're not going to render legal advice. We're not going to advise you as an attorney. An attorney is not a finance person. Mm-hmm. They are very good in the legal side, in the positioning and negotiating or navigating a court, but they are not the financial person that can pick up on these kind of things. And really, I think often you're doing yourself a disservice, and I'm going to put this in a very blanket area. Use the right professional for the right task. It sounds kind of counterintuitive, but adding professionals can actually lower your cost and get you a better result if you use the right people for the right things. Use a coach for the coaching. Use a financial expert for the finance. Use a legal person for the legal. You don't want to pay $500, $600, $800 to an attorney to be your therapist or your financial person. They're not trained.
No, so. Exactly. And then that's what I come against, is that emotional stuff where, you know, they go in and they're like, and he did this and she did that. And they're just like, and the lawyer's like, okay, thank you. $600, right?
I know, exactly.
It's, you know, when you talk and work with a coach like me, we're going, that matters. I want you to tell your lawyer. That doesn't matter. Don't let it bother you. Your friends and family are going to be bored and not want to hear it, not know how to help you. You're going to find friends falling away because of the, you know, the smears and things like that. So you're going to be all alone on an island. If you have a team, and again, most victims of narcissistic abuse at some point were financially abused if they were not the breadwinner. And so, you know, they need to have somebody that knows this, and you will. It's like, oh, but I don't have any money for this. I have no money. You know what? You'll have more money because you did these steps and did it this way, because you're going to waste it $500 telling the lawyer, this is what just happened. And they're going to be like, thank you. Have a nice day. You know, it, you just wasted, you know, 5 hours of my time. You wasted all the time that they could have gotten from you to just going, this is the numbers. This is what you got to do. Do this, do that. And that speeds everything else up. You're actually giving the information to the lawyer and ending up paying them less.
And you're getting the right professional often for a third of the price if exactly. You're doing that.
Exactly. So tell me where people can find you. I want you to, you know, we'll share all the links down below, your radio show, your website. How can they find you?
The easiest way is through my website. It is lifecycle.financial, the name of the company. lifecycle.financial. If you want to email me, it's my first name, H-I-R-S-C-H, Hirsch at lifecycle.financial.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much. This has been
thank you.
Interview, and I know a lot of people are going to be able to take home takeaways and feel better and more secure and hopefully call you.
I appreciate you having me on. I always feel when we on one of these shows together, it's like we have a conversation and I always forget we're videotaping this, but I really appreciate being invited, being a part of this, and hopefully people get a lot out of this because it's a difficult situation to go through, and it's they should reach out to the right resources.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Well, I hope you found that helpful. He is a wealth of information. We both looked down and went, uh-oh, we talked too long. There's so much we could have talked all day long on this divorce, and the financial pieces are something you need to understand. So I hope this answered some of your questions. Please feel free to reach out to him. His information is down below. And my name is Tracy Malone. I am the founder of Narcissist Abuse Support. com, and I am a divorce expert as well as a coach and the author of, oh, my book is not even up there, Divorcing Your Narcissist. You can't make this shit up. So this is Tracy Malone. If you like this video, please like it, share it, and if you haven't subscribed yet, I always forget to ask. I'd appreciate it. Have a great day, everyone. I'll see you next time.